My guest at this time is Dr. John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He is also the author of numerous books on guns, including More Guns, Less Crime. We've asked him to offer his expertise on a number of suggestions being made to tighten gun laws in the wake of the horrific mass shooting in Las Vegas on Sunday night. And Dr. Lott, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, everyone from left-leaning politicians, for the most part, to late-night comedians are pushing different ideas. Gun rights advocates often counter that even if we did some of these things, it wouldn't have been able to stop horrific events like this. But let's go through a few of them, and I want to get your analysis on whether these would make any difference and what the impact would be. Let's start with the ongoing call for universal background checks. What's the system look like right now, and how much of a difference would a universal background check make?
Well, universal background checks would have background checks on the private transfer of guns. You know, wouldn't have stopped this attack, wouldn't have stopped any of the attacks during the Obama administration, wouldn't have stopped attacks for years before that. It doesn't really seem to matter. I mean, they were bringing this up even before they knew how the person had obtained the gun on Monday morning. You had numerous politicians and others advocating for it. So, you know, President Obama brought it up in each of his speeches when he talked about mass public shootings, but it didn't seem to matter that it didn't affect it there. Here's the problem, and that is the current background check system is a mess. One, it's costly. I've been located in Washington, D.C. last couple of days. It costs $175 to privately transfer a gun in Washington, D.C. You can get these background checks done for as low as $55 in Oregon, and it's kind of in between and all the other places, but, you know, that's a real cost. I mean, it may not stop you or I from being able to buy a gun, but a poor person, let's say a poor black who lives in a high-crime area, the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, $175 or even $55 may make the difference between whether or not they're legally able to go and obtain a gun to protect themselves and their families.
Let's talk about another one now, and this was certainly one that President Obama talked about and Hillary Clinton talked about it last year, and that's tying the ability to buy a gun to the no-fly list. Their argument, and Jimmy Kimmel said this again on Monday night, that if you're not trusted to be on a plane, you shouldn't be trusted to buy a gun. What's your reaction to that?
Well, first of all, the no-fly list under the Obama administration doesn't have anything to do with whether the person's trusted or not. The Obama administration increased the number of people on the no-fly list by tenfold over what it was before. They have just lots of people who are people of interest to talk to because the people might know something that might be useful in their investigation. It's just their way to go and flag people. But in any case, you know, for somebody to be on the list, even, you know, the real people, you can just have some person in the Department of Homeland Security put your name on it. You know, there's no legal safeguards, whatever. What's gotten the Democrats upset is the Republicans have said, fine, you can put people on a no-fly list and you can ban them from buying a gun, but you have to, you know, give the person an option to be able to go to court to go and get his name removed from the list. And the Democrats just think that that's horrible. They think that once some unnamed bureaucrat puts you on a list there, you should be stuck on it, and there shouldn't be judicial oversight of that. That's been the whole crux of the difference that's been there. And so, you know, whether you think people should have their ability to defend themselves and their family determined by some bureaucrat that they have no appeal over, or not, you know, that seems like a big difference. But
another thing Democrats have said, and have said again in the wake of Las Vegas, is that the Republicans have allowed and just passed legislation allowing mentally ill people to get guns. I know there's more to that story. What more do we need to know?
Okay, so here's the deal. At the end of the Obama administration, they pushed through a rule that for Social Security recipients, if you receive help on your finances, such as you had somebody that you had given power of attorney to handle them for you, you would be declared mentally incompetent and banned from owning a gun. That's essentially what the Obama administration was doing to military veterans. And you'd have something like 4.2 million Social Security recipients would be like that. My mom is like that. My mom hates using computers. So she has my sister go and handle her finances. Well, just because my mom hates using computers and has given my sister power of attorney doesn't mean I don't think that my mom has the mental capability to be able to determine when to go and defend herself if somebody were to break into her house and attack her. They throw around terms like mental illness and what have you. And I don't think, you know, people hear that and say, oh, wow, we can't let people mentally ill have a gun. But the thing is, the Democrats have just been completely dishonest on what they are going to define as being mentally ill. I don't think just because somebody gets help on their finances, 4.2 million elderly people on Social Security should be banned from owning a gun for protection. And the thing is, my research shows that it's basically people who are relatively weaker physically, women and the elderly, who benefit disproportionately from having the option to go and defend themselves.
We're talking with Dr. John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's the author of numerous books on guns, including More Guns, Less Crime. Another thing that folks like Chuck Schumer and Senator Blumenthal bring back is they want a renewal of the so-called assault weapons ban, which was instituted during the Clinton administration, expired in 2004. Sometimes it seems a little vague on what they actually mean by an assault weapon, but what do they mean, and what effect did that ban actually have?
Well, they basically picked a lot of guns based on how they look rather than how they function. So assault weapons were semi-automatic guns that looked like military weapons. Well, the inside guts of the guns were the same as any small-caliber hunting rifle. I don't know why one would expect any impact on crime rates by banning guns based on how they look. If they wanted to ban all semi-automatic guns, then that would be at least something debatable. But I don't think they ever wanted to do that, because civilians benefit a lot in terms of self-defense from semi-automatic guns. If you have, there are three different types of guns. There's manually loaded guns. You pull the trigger, a bullet fires, and then you have to physically yourself put another bullet in the chamber of the gun. You have semi-automatics. One pull the trigger, one bullet comes out. The gun reloads itself. One pull the trigger, one bullet comes out, and so on. And then you have fully automatic or machine guns, where as long as the trigger is depressed, you'll see lots of bullets coming out. If you have two criminals attacking you, or if you fire a warning shot or you miss, you may not have the luxury of time to go and manually reload your gun to be able to go and shoot it a second time. And I don't think most civilians who want to try to go and defend themselves want to be there. The vast majority of guns sold in the United States are semi-automatic guns, so that would be a ban on most guns. What impact did it have on crime rates? And not only wouldn't you expect it to have any, but it didn't have any. Even studies paid for and set up by the Clinton administration, which instituted the ban, weren't able to find any benefits in terms of reduced crime.
Dr. Lott, one of the terms that's certainly been a buzzword over the past few days is bump stock, and that's the alterations you can make to a semi-automatic weapon that can apparently make it fire more like an automatic weapon, and that seems to be what happened in the case in Las Vegas. That appears to be getting some reception among Republicans on Capitol Hill. What's your view on that?
First of all, it's been around for decades, okay? But I have no problem banning it. I'm just going to tell you, I don't think it's going to have a big effect on anything. And, you know, it's kind of like the discussion that we have about magazines. This guy that did this attack, he apparently had the engineering ability to go and have his car wired with ammonium nitrate and other explosives that were apparently really devastating explosives. This guy had the ability to go and make up many bombs. I don't know. The police have just said a lot of bombs, so I don't even know how many bombs he had at his home. And so, you know, somebody who has that type of access to engineering materials, what have you, you can, we talk about things like magazine size limits. Magazines are like trivial things for people to go and make. They're basically a box with a spring in it. I've seen people make them in 2 minutes. And, you want to go and ban these other types of things, fine. I have no problem with you doing it. It's just that people shouldn't be led to believe that somehow some guy like this guy isn't going to be able to easily make these types of things on his own, or not easily, but he'll be able to figure out on how to do it, and he'll do it. And so, you know, I think people are concentrating on the wrong things as the solution here, though, you know, I understand it'll make people feel better.
What's your assessment so far of the media's approach to the gun debate in the wake of Las Vegas?
I think it's been irresponsible, as usual. I mean, again, the media was speculating on all this stuff before we even knew the facts. So you have the media going and interviewing different politicians and what have you, and the politicians would say things like, well, we need universal background checks. And no one in the media would say, well, we don't know whether it would have stopped this one yet, but can you point to one of the past mass public shootings that it would have stopped? Just one. Can you point to one? But the media doesn't ask questions like that. You know, it's that, well, somebody's trying to do something. And they never even ask anything about, well, what are the costs and benefits? You know, I'd love to be on CNN or on MSNBC. Instead, they just have panels of like four people that all agree with each other on the stuff. I mean, I don't really know what the point of that is in terms of a discussion and learning about the costs and benefits. You know, the other networks have been no better. I mean, Fox is the only one that's had any debates on this type of stuff at all. Not even all their programs have had debates on it. So it's just, you know, it's, I think for most of the media, it's been pretty bad.
Last question, and perhaps this goes outside your field, but what do you think is the most effective response to prevent this from happening in the future, whether it's in the realm of firearms or anywhere else?
If we're talking about mass public shootings generally, okay, and first of all, I have to say, most people don't realize that the United States has relatively few mass public shootings compared to the rest of the world. Compared to Europe, our casualty rate for mass public shootings is significantly less than what they have, and the rest of the world's even much, much worse. But, you know, here's the issue, and that is you have to have somebody with a gun basically on the scene as soon as possible to be able to go and stop them. And police, God bless them, have an impossible job when it comes to stopping these mass public shootings, because you put somebody in the vast majority of these cases, you put somebody in uniform out to go and stop these attacks. It's like putting somebody with a uniform or with a neon sign that says, shoot me first. In case after case, I can give you, when an attack occurs, the very first people who are targeted and killed are the police officers. And so, you know, the question is, well, what do you do? Well, one of the things that Israel learned to do was to go and allow civilians to be able to go and carry. Now, unless you had somebody in the hotel room next to this guy or, you know, below him or right outside the door or someplace else that would have known what was going on, it's unlikely that would have made a difference. The guy was barricaded in, had the door locked. It's a very unusual circumstance there. But in 98-plus percent of these mass public shootings since 1970, these attackers have gone at places where they knew victims weren't able to defend themselves, so-called gun-free zones, where general citizens weren't allowed to have guns for protection. And there's a reason why they do that. The reason why they go and do that is because they may be crazy in some sense, but they're not stupid. They want to kill as many people as possible. And they know if they go to a place where people can't protect themselves, they're going to be able to go and kill more people.
Dr. Lott, we'll keep it there for now. Thank you, sir, so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Dr. John Lott is president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's also the author of numerous books on guns, including More Guns, Less Crime. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.